Welcome back to the CBI Growth Podcast. I'm Joe Marshall, and coming up today we have Spring Budget. What do we want to see in the Chancellor's Red Box to boost growth? We'll be hearing from Louise Hellam, Director of Economic Policy here at the CBI. We'll be in conversation with my co-host, Saima Colassi-Aldridge. Saima, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, Joe. Great to be here.
Coming up later, I'll be talking to Lydia Hamilton-Rimmer in the CBI's health team to look at how the health and well-being of their people is impacting businesses in the UK today, and importantly, how that can be improved. But before that, let's go to Louise to talk about the business of the budget.
Hello, Louise, and welcome to the CBI's Growth Podcast. It's great to have you here on your first time. You and I are both fresh back off half term, where we managed a small amount of time off. How was yours?
That's right. Yeah, no, my time is good. I took my seven-year-old to the Science Museum, which was quite fun, but did largely involve me standing in queues for all the fun, exciting things while she ran around and went off and did them. But it was good.
That's okay. I think that's unfortunately our role. So it sounds like you didn't have childcare over half term.
No, we do have a little bit of grandparent support. We're quite lucky in that regard, but yes, few and far between.
Did you enjoy my absolutely seamless segue into the fact that the reason we're here today is to talk about the budget and all the things that we are working with government and members on? And let's kick off with childcare. So Louise, we've spent a lot of time talking about this. We've talked about this on the podcast before. We're talking about a lot with government, a lot with our members. We know that it's a really critical part of our social infrastructure. And if we're going to get growth going in the UK the way we need it to, we need government to pull on every lever to get people back into the workplace. And that includes the many tens of thousands and plus more women who leave the workforce every year due to inadequate childcare. So please, can you remind us, what is it that we're looking for?
Yeah, so you're right. Labour and skill shortages is just the number one issue for businesses at the moment. So we're looking this spring budget for the Chancellor to really take action on this issue. And it's been a long running issue in the UK. So what we want to see is to have a really big impact on some of those costs around childcare. And I think the first thing that we need to see is actually an independent review to look at the entirety of the childcare system. But the second thing, we can't wait for that. We do need to see action now. So we need to see an increase in funding for the existing system that exists for 3 and 4 year olds, which is either 15 hours or 30 hours, to make sure that's funded properly.
Yeah, because I think one of the challenges currently is that you have that 15 or 30 hours, depending on your income level. But because it's not funded properly, providers are still having to, you know, bear a lot of rising costs, which is passed on to parents.
That's right. And you tend to have a lot of cross-subsidisation as well. So yeah, if you have a younger child in childcare, you'll find that you're probably paying a little bit for those who've got older kids and things like that as well. So not only do we need support for those with children who are age 3 and 4, but we need support for people who've got children aged 1 to 2 as well. And we need that same level of support in terms of the 15 or the 30 hours. And I think parents with children of that age group is particularly crucial, because you've got to really get a big gap in provision at the moment.
And yeah, actually, you end parental leave and then there's nothing until they're 3. Yeah.
Exactly, which means that you're putting parents in a terrible choice of where they're really considering at the end of that period of parental leave, can they afford to go back into work? And if they can't, then you're taking, you know, a good couple of years outside of work, and actually you lose your link with your employer, which means if you do eventually come back, and obviously a lot of this that we're talking about with childcare is around women, it means that you have lost out on that experience. You tend to then often return to a job which might be lower skilled, lower paid. Mm. And that not only has an impact on the number of women in work at the moment, but often then the kind of rest of their career and their kind of wage prospects in the future.
Exactly.
As well.
So it's about, you know, gender pay gaps, but it's also about productivity when they're back into the workplace.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think reforms that even keep, because what we're seeing from the numbers that you and your team are looking at is that it's not necessarily that people are leaving the workforce completely, but if they are still in the workforce, they're having to massively reduce their hours to balance that. So I think that's a really, really important point there, isn't it?
That's right, exactly. Yeah, you've got a lot of people, particularly women who are out of work when they could be in work, but that point around the increase in hours as well. And this is something that can have a really significant difference to firms, but the economy as a whole. So at the moment, you've got about 560,000 mothers in the UK who've left work due to insufficient childcare. If they were able to be in work at full-time hours, that could add over £30 billion to the UK economy. Like, this is a big issue.
These are big numbers.
It's a big prize, but we need to see action on it. Yeah.
And I think the other stat, partly because you're on the pod today and I want to show off to you, when you write numbers, I remember them. And I think that might, this one might not be your number, but it's the average childcare cost in the UK is £14,000 a year. And the median wage in the UK is £33,000 a year.
It's a significant chunk of people's income. Exactly. Yeah. That's why you have so many people who it really doesn't pay for them to return to work.
Exactly. So that is one of our big asks, because we know that workforce is holding back growth. And we also know that the kind of critical social infrastructure, of which childcare is a big part, is important to get people back into work. But we've got the budget in a few weeks, and this is just one part of it, right? So can you just give our listeners a bit of a sense of, you know, the business environment right now, what companies and firms are facing? You know, we talk to them every day, don't we?
That's right, yeah. So I think that there is still a lot of concern out there in the business community at the moment, and lots of firms who are continuing to face headwinds. I think there's a bit of a discussion at the moment, will we be in recession this year? Will we not be? I mean, our own forecast is that we might have quite a mild recession, but even so, we're expecting low growth in the UK economy, not only this year, but the next few years as well.
Yeah, and just on this recession point, because it comes up quite a lot, and I think the difference is that because of the high inflationary environment, the impact of the way that the recession is felt by real people every day, by employees, by other people, it's a big deal, and it's this cost of living that's really impacted, isn't it?
Exactly, that's right. It's having a huge impact, not only on businesses, but on households as well, and especially those who are at the lower end as well.
Yeah. So sorry, I interrupted your flow. Keep going.
So, thinking about some of the headwinds that businesses are facing at the moment, it is going to be a tough year. We do need the budget to come through and provide support and provide confidence to businesses that growth will come through. The autumn budget was quite rightly about stability. Yeah. We had a great speech from the Chancellor a couple of weeks ago around his vision for growth, but we're yet to see action on this. Yeah. And that's where we really do need to see delivery at the spring budget.
Yeah. So what we're really getting into now is the growth conversation. And it wouldn't be a CBI conversation without a conversation on growth.
Indeed.
So one of the things that you and I spend quite a lot of time talking about is capital investment and historic low rates of investment in the UK, which are caused by a number of things. Tony talked about it in his speech in January. He and I talked about it on the podcast. You and I have talked about it many times. So can you just remind our listeners, what are we looking for from the Chancellor on unlocking that business investment?
Yeah, so as we're talking about the economic outlook, business investment is really key to this. And business investment is set to fall quite sharply this year. Part of that is because of the kind of depressed economic outlook. But also we're seeing a couple of policy changes that are coming in that are going to really dampen investment. So we're seeing the big, large incorporation tax that's coming in. And we're also seeing the end of the super deduction policy as well, which is something Rishi Sunak himself introduced, obviously, when he was Chancellor, and has been really key to supporting investments in businesses.
It's been such a successful policy
for the last
it?
2 years. That's right. And I think that it's really important that we have a successor to that. And what we're calling for is something called full expensing. And it would mean that even though corporation tax is increasing, firms who choose to do the right thing and invest in the UK are supported to do that, because you take the value of the investment that they make off their corporation tax bill. And importantly, we need to see that benefit come through immediately. And that is particularly important at the moment because of all those pressures on businesses at the moment that are squeezing cash flow, squeezing their ability to invest. We really need to provide that support. So
that's new then, that second part then. The cash flow part is new, right? So it's rather than having the returns from the super deduction seen later, you want to see them sooner.
So the super deduction was great because it actually provides 120% of the value that of an investment that you make. So if you buy a piece of plant or a piece of machinery. And so we aren't actually calling for anything that is as generous as that. Maybe we should be calling for more, but we're only calling for like 100% of the value for that. But the key thing that we need that the super deduction gave is that kind of cash return up front in the year that that investment is made. And the problem, as much as the super deduction was great, the problem with it is that it was only temporary. So it was only going to last for 2 years. It is due to end at the end of March. And particularly for businesses that have got long investment cycles, that just doesn't provide them with enough time to take advantage of it. Their investment window is too wide. So we need a permanent system here.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to recognise that we are in, you know, slightly more constrained fiscal territory than we were in when the super deduction came in the first place. One of the specific things about our ask is that we're not asking government to do everything in year one, right? This is about sending the right signals.
Yeah, so we really do need a strong signal on this. I think we need to show that there is a successor to the super deduction and that kind of counterweight to the corporation tax increase. We would like to see full expensing come in from the 1st of April when the super deduction ends. But if the government can't commit to do that now, then they need to set out a clear roadmap of when they'll be able to do that and at least provide a bit of a down payment on that now. So kind of go halfway towards the 100%, go to 50%.
Exactly. And have a roadmap for how you're going to get to the 100% and by when.
Exactly.
Because exactly as you say, businesses have long investment cycles.
Yeah,
they plan in the future.
They're making decisions now. So even if you're not able to bring in the policy now, if you can signal that it is going to happen in 2-3 years time, then they can bake that into their investment plans right now.
One of the areas that we're talking about a lot at the CBI, we talked about it in Tony's speech, we've talked about it on the podcast before, we're talking about it in every place that we can, is the massive green growth opportunity that we have in the UK. We are world leading in offshore wind. We, you know, have so many opportunities, whether that's because of our geography or because of our world-class science and innovation and world-class universities and really innovative companies who are leading the way, green finance. It's all here in the UK. And we're never going to match pound to dollar. We're never going to match pound to euro, but we can be smart about how we do green growth in the UK. Yeah. So what are you looking for out of the budget on green investment?
Yeah, so I think on green growth, the UK really is at a kind of critical juncture right now. And we need to see a lot from this budget and that we haven't seen, I don't think, over the last couple of months, over the last couple of years. The UK government has been quite quiet on this, particularly compared to the US and compared to the EU. I think we need to see a lot of action in particular around energy efficiency and really be serious around that. And there's two things that we can do on that particularly. One is more support, particularly in the form of subsidies to small and micro firms. And we're calling for something called a Help to Green voucher. So that will help them to invest in things like solar panels and insulation. We also need to really ensure high energy users have got the support to decarbonize as well. The government have got a scheme called the Industrial Energy Transformation Fund. But the applications for that, the last ones that they're taking in, close now in February, and we've got no future to the rest of that scheme.
So again, it comes to that future planning.
So, we need to see that scheme extended, exactly. And then again, firms have got that certainty around their plans to decarbonise.
Because when we talk about energy security, in the same breath, we at the CBI talk about demand side reduction. So how do we make sure that not only we're having a more secure energy system going forward, but that we're also reducing energy consumption in the first place? And those asks, both for small and large businesses around energy efficiency, are absolutely key to that.
Yeah, that's right. But you're right. We need to see that supply side come through at the moment. And I think, again, that's where we've got an inconsistent picture from government around what their vision is and then the announcements that they've made so far. So another example that we need to see change on at the spring budget is over the autumn, the government introduced two windfall taxes, one on the oil and gas industry, one on electricity generators. There's a really effective set of reliefs that they've provided within the oil and gas scheme, but there aren't within the scheme for electricity generators. And those are obviously the ones who are delivering a lot of the low carbon infrastructure that we need in the UK that is damaging investment. So we need to, again, see those investment incentives there.
Thank you, Louise. And thank you so much for reminding us of all of our top asks. Obviously, there are other things that we're looking for. And I suggest that all of you listeners go on the CBI website and see the more detail of the rest of our budget submission too. Thank you, Louise, for joining us. And it'd be great if you could come back post-budget so you and I can do a bit of an assessment and dissection of what that means for our members.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to.
Thanks so much.
Well, that was fascinating. And there was one thing that stuck out for me in that conversation, Simon, and that was that stat around the average cost of childcare versus the average wage in the country.
Yeah, it's really quite something. And I think all of the stuff that I was just talking about with Louise there, it's all about how do you get economic growth going in the UK? How do you impact the cost of living? How do you, you know, make sure the economy is growing? Social infrastructure, childcare is a part of that. Investment allowances and the super deduction is a part of that. There's a lot there. And I'm looking forward to the next podcast where we can talk a bit more about this.
Yes, well, we will be back in around a month's time to talk about how the budget has gone and also to have a look at some of the conversations around our Future of Work conference. But before that, look, as we've heard, workforce health is a major concern, not just going into this budget, but across the whole economy, with economic inactivity due to long-term ill health at its highest for 20 years. To talk to us about those concerns and what we think should be done to remedy them, let's hear from our senior policy advisor in the CBI's health team, Lydia Hamilton-Rimmer. Hi, Lydia. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hi, Joe. It's great to be here today. It's a very exciting time at the moment in health. It feels like we're finally getting to our moment ahead of the spring budget in just a few weeks' time. We're talking to lots of businesses. We're talking to Treasury, to government almost every day about what's going to be done to address inactivity, to address the health challenges that we're seeing across business and across society. It is busy, but I absolutely love it. And we are really excited about the change that is hopefully about to come.
We've just heard from Louise about our broader budget asks. We know that economic inactivity is a huge problem, not just with regards to the obviously very big issue of childcare, but for many people since the pandemic, physical and mental health has impacted their ability to work. But what's the reality of that economic activity and what does it mean for the nation's workforce?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. It's a really good question. It's also a really important question if we're looking to get the economy growing again. For any of you who saw the ONS data last week, the labour market stats showed really interesting kind of demographic splits around the young workforce, the ageing workforce. And we know that kind of a third of inactivity, total inactivity, is due to long-term illness and those who are falling out of the workforce due to that. What I think is really interesting is the fact that actually economic inactivity hasn't been a critical issue for most of our working lifetimes, right? It's rarely been an issue of that kind of 25 to 39 middle-aged bracket that we are actually really seeing now. And this poses quite a challenge because these people are our current workforce. They're also our future workforce for quite some time. So really addressing this and remembering the middle people is really important and something we're really looking for government to deliver on at the spring budget in just a few weeks. I should also say, though, this picture looks quite bleak and there's lots of talk of inactivity at the moment. And it's kind of framed very negatively because it is impacting both people and businesses alike. But it's also really important to look at the prizes on offer if we get moving on this stuff. So business interventions, so businesses taking steps on health alone can contribute $60 billion back into the economy every single year. It also can help to reduce the workforce disease burden by up to 20% in 2030. So we really have an opportunity, which is very exciting, to be that place of prevention, to really help our people create future resilience and also economic growth.
So just sort of on that opportunity, with the budget is just around the corner, 15th of March, as we know, what's the opportunity that the government has to act on that inactivity?
Yeah, for those of you who may have heard the Chancellor's speech back in late January, the Chancellor set out four pillars, which all started with E around kind of the areas for economic growth and prosperity. Those were enterprise, education, employment, and also everywhere. We've been hearing from government and also the Chancellor's really keen to deliver in this spring statement on that employment E of the four that he set out. This is against the backdrop of high economic inactivity, but also he drew out the fact that mental health is really a crisis amongst our working population and beyond. So there's a real opportunity for the government to look at how we address in the short term with things like addressing mental health challenges, occupational health. The Chancellor is setting a punchy target of getting us up to 90% uptake, which is quite punchy considering we're currently around 50%, but our international comparators can do it. So why can't we? And then also around kind of really laying the foundations for SME businesses who need to kind of be helped to get on this journey through incentivizing financial incentives, for example. It's all really important stuff. And we know that there's some good things coming, we're hoping, in the budget.
you know, you talk to government, you talk to businesses every day as well. What are they saying to you? What are they telling you when it comes to the health and wellbeing of their people?
Yeah, look, Joe, this is kind of front and centre of everyone's minds. Without a happy and healthy workforce, we actually can't do our jobs. We can't grow our businesses. We can't produce whatever we're doing, build the bridges, all of those things. Our ETS data on the CBI's kind of central employment surveys that we do every year showed at the end of 2022 that health and wellbeing was the top ED&I diversity priority for businesses and continues to be throughout this year so far too. I guess there's two things, right? People really want happy and healthy people, but they also want to maintain their labour supply. And at the moment, we have a very tight labour market. So retention, recruitment are all really important. And employees themselves, when either looking to stay or looking to move in their jobs, are seeing health benefits as kind of second importance to pay. So we all like the money, but actually, what are our businesses going to do to support our health against a backdrop of not being able to access your GP, for example, and really needing some health support?
So, you know, are there any practical tools or advice out there that businesses can use now?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the CBI launched its Work Health Index at annual conference just a few months ago with the excellent Amanda Pritchard, the NHS CEO. This tool has been supported by the government. It's been endorsed by NHS England, and it helps businesses to benchmark their policies, practices and provision, which relates to employee health and productivity, anything from financial well-being to mental health to how we get our people moving and how we get them eating and living well. You know, it's really helpful for businesses. It provides a tangible comparator on how they're doing against their sector, their size, their region and their revenue. So not only can it help businesses know whether they're doing well on the health piece, but actually they know how they're competing against other businesses, which they might be looking to take talent from or to retain, to not let people go and lose them into other businesses too. So that's the tool we've got. There's obviously lots of excellent information out there as well from the government, from key people like CIPD, for example. But the CBI's got a tool for all businesses to use that will really help them kickstart this journey and know what they're doing on health.
And where can businesses find that?
Yeah, just search for workhealthindex.co.uk, and I'm loving that I can give it a little plug right there.
There you go, that's where to go. Well, we'll put that in the description of the podcast as well, so anyone who's listening to that once can find that easily. So look, this is all going on to the backdrop of a cost of living crisis. It's inevitably going to make things harder for employees and tighten those health challenges. Just how are businesses responding to this, this cost of living crisis that's hitting all of us?
Yeah, look, as you said, the cost of living crisis is being felt by people and businesses alike. It's actually been really interesting to see the trends coming out of businesses, particularly at the end of last year. That was seeing businesses really take on a role of providing kind of financial education and literacy to their staff, whether it be through webinars, whether it be through training and information, or just telling people how they can kind of make those small savings that really amount to a lot. We know that actually one in four people that are in debt also have a mental health condition as a result. And it's really important that we see these two as kind of having an impact on each other. So both mental health support and financial well-being support are equally as important with a backdrop of the cost of living crisis. I guess one thing we also have to recognise at the same time, though, is that whilst there's kind of a cost of living crisis for the people, there's also a cost of doing business crisis. So our people leaders are looking at their balance sheets, are looking at what interventions really make a difference, and also what drives ROI and return on investment back for those businesses. So government intervention and incentivization here is actually really key at the spring budget. If we want businesses to continue to helping people on their health and their financial well-being, mental health included in that, then really some government support will be needed through this time.
Okay, so finally, taking where we are post-pandemic as a baseline, where does the CBI believe we should be with health in 10 years' time?
Yeah, look, this is the question at the front and centre of business people's minds, thought leaders in this space across the health and work piece, and us too here at the CBI. What I think is really interesting when we look at this question is actually where we've been and come to on climate. So with the climate debate and the crisis that we're seeing, we needed government machinery, we needed investment incentives, we needed corporate reporting, we needed collaboration between both business and government alike to really see how we can shift how we're doing business and how we're doing policymaking together to really combat the climate crisis. I think we know the same thing is the situation with health. So both health and climate are two of the biggest crises we're facing as a country and nationally, globally too. Without healthy people, we won't have a resilient workforce. We won't be able to build those bridges to make the products and deliver the services that we need to as an economy. So looking at health in the same way that we did with climate and together is really where we need to get to. That's why the CBI in this spring statement is calling for a health and work task force. It's an 8 to 12 week sprint collaborated between government policymakers, but also the CBI, the Health Foundation and others to really see how we can establish what interventions can businesses make that make a difference and what do we need in both the short and the long term to create future resilience for our workforce's health going into the future and up to 2030, where we hope to see lots more growth going on.
Fantastic. Lydia, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. Great to speak to you.
Simon, we've had a lot of talk today about the budget on childcare, on health, but I'm really interested to know what your big takeaway is from the health conversation there.
I think it's so important to think about a healthy workforce. And in times of difficulty and economic difficulty, it is really important to make sure that as employers, we are making sure that our workforce is healthy, because that is important for moral reasons, but also because it helps growth, it helps the economy, it helps productivity. And I'm going to give a little shout out to the CBI's Work Health Index, which you can find more about online. And that is an amazing tool that helps you as an employer and as a business understand all of the different policies that you have in your organisation that impact on your employees' well-being. So a little shout out there on that one. Cheeky, I know, but got to be done.
That's all right. We're all about cheeky plugs on this podcast today.
Yeah, it's not just one long advert, but I am going to cheeky plug the Work Health Index.
That's fine. So look, that just about wraps things up for this episode of the Growth Podcast. I just want to say a huge thank you to Louise Helen and Lydia Hamilton-Rimmer for talking to us. And of course, thank you, Simon, for co-hosting as always.
Always a pleasure, Joe. It's a highlight of my month to do this podcast with you. And as you said earlier on, we're back in about a month's time and we're going to be doing reaction to the spring budget and what that means for business. And we're also going to be talking about our Future of Work conference, which is happening at the beginning of March.
That's right. It certainly is. And I'm looking forward to that too, which leaves me with one last thing, which is to just say a big thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. You'll hear from us again, like we said, on the next episode of the Growth Podcast in just over a month's time. If you liked what you heard today, please like and subscribe to our podcast channel. And for more content from us, check out cbi.org.uk. Until the next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.